Welcome to Rockin' the Music World. I'm Robert Lloyd.
Get on the left, get on the right, turn on the radio and join in the fight. Sort out the lies, seek out the truth. On the radio, they're giving the proof. You're gonna love it, hate it, it can confuse. First time you try it, it can give you the blues. But take my word, you can call and abuse. Just keep on talking news. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I'm Robert Lloyd, and this is the show Rockin' the Music World with yours truly. Anyway, this is just going to be a fun one because it's all opinion. There's some factual support of this. We're going to be talking, you know, certain record sales to decide where we're going to come with this. But this is going to be about the top 10 rock ballads of all time and by us white folks.
Don't let the sun catch you crying. The night's the time for all your tears.
Walk through this world with me
to lead a better life. I need my love.
If I were a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby? If a tinker were my trade, would you still find me carrying the pots I made, following behind me?
See if we can do without the others that have come into our life, whether we wanted them there or not. We're just a unique group, and we have our own smarts, we have our own intelligence, we have our own want to do things right. In fact, we have a lot of that. We're a unique group, unlike any other group in the whole world. And we are worth preserving. And this top 10 rock ballads of all time, it's merely opinion. It's fun opinion. And everybody out there listening, you're going to have your own opinions. And your opinions are just as important as mine or anybody else's. And it's just kind of fun to say, okay, what does this guy think of the best ballads of all time? Rock ballads, I'm talking now. And so we have to think about, well, rock and roll started about, let's say, about 1955 and forward. And then rock, when I was doing research, first of all, I wanted to get a group of songs to choose from, just not all rock ballads of all time, the top 500. That's not going to do us any good. But go through the rock great songs of all time. And I went through many, many lists on the internet, different websites, including Rolling Stone, which might be the last place to go to. But just so many lists that people have come up with that's supposed to be the best list. And so what I did, I want to come up with the top 10. And I'm not sure what should be in the top 10. And think about it, there really isn't, okay, top 10 best songs of all time, rock ballads. No, there really isn't anything such as that. But we can say this song certainly deserves strong consideration for the top 10. And there's going to be probably another 25 songs that probably deserve consideration for the top 10. And I'm not going to deny that, and I'm not going to say, as you're listening in, you don't count. Or your opinion, oh, well, where does that come from? Come on. No, we're just people here, white people that just love, you know, rock ballads. Remember, the power ballads in rock and roll are the biggest selling songs. When you have a huge power ballad, and what is a power ballad, for instance? It's a ballad, a slower song, a lot of times romantic in nature, but it has a drum track and bass and a power soundtrack that pushes that underlying rhythm and the melody of the song in a powerful way, and that's where they get the term power ballad from. And maybe the first power ballad of all time might have been, you know, something like the Moonlight Sonata. I mean, you can put I mean, a modern version of that could have been done as a power ballad. So anyway, they're the biggest sellers of all the genres of music. And it's so interesting. What gets to be number one on the hit parade isn't necessarily the number one song of all time. You will find these power ballads many times get to like, oh, they got the number 8, or they got the number 24 on the hit parade. And yet, over time, they became huge and loved by the masses of our people. And they are the ones that stood their time and stuck around for, and they became the huge golden oldie that is so loved. I don't listen to golden oldie stations much. I don't like living in the past per se, even though I love certain great songs. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I love going back into the late 1700s, early 1800s of Beethoven, for instance, and Tchaikovsky in the 1800s. Later on. I love all of that, but I don't want to just live there. I'm always looking for the latest song. For instance, I'm a songwriter, and I've said on previous shows, I'm sorry, I can't write a song from 1798. It's gone. I can only write a song this year, today, at this moment. That's all I can do. I might try to write a certain style from the past, and that's fine and dandy, but every song that's written is a brand new song. So I don't like to live in the past. I know friends of mine from high school. I knew a friend, and I graduated high school in 70, college a bit later than that, of course. But people remember the songs from their graduating class in high school, even more than college or anything, it seems like. Your 12th grade as a senior is so threatening and so, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I remember thinking about that as a senior. I didn't know what I wanted to do at the time. You know, it was kind of a introspective time, especially in the spring of my senior year in high school. And I think everybody here listening had those same feelings, whether you were anticipating going to college, oh, I can't wait, or getting into a trade, working as a subcontractor, building pools, whatever you might decide, going into the service. There was some anxiety on that, and all this time you're surrounded by music of the hit parade at that time, and those are ingrained in your spirit. Now, everybody has that time. What if you graduated high school in 85, you're going to have a different set of songs that affect you as much as songs from 1970 for me. In fact, songs from 1970, I really didn't care for that year I graduated high school. I would go back probably, the Beatles were winding down at the time, they were breaking up and stuff. And there was a you know, music was changing at the time, and you know, I wasn't too enthralled with that. I certainly wasn't enthralled with the 70s music. While I was a professional musician in the 70s, I disliked a lot of the music from that time period. So I'm a little different in that, but I always loved the great new songs, if it's something really super melodic, and I just love it. I think you probably do too when you think of the great melodic songs. Not the imbecilic songs. Usually they say in the music business, as the tempo speeds up, the IQ goes down. And I'm sorry, folks. That's my observation too. Now there's a few fast songs I do like, of course, you know. But generally speaking, the power ballad dictates. And we've got some great ones from Gentiles here today, and that's what we're going to try to concentrate on. On occasion, there might be somebody I think might be a Gentile or, you know, a white upper European ancestry type individual, and they turn out to be Jewish or something like that. And that happens. I mean, it's such a secretive world at times. And then, you know, somebody will say, oh, are you a dummy? You didn't know that, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm sorry. Everybody makes mistakes. I don't care who you are. I'm constantly amazed when I find out people that I had no idea of were Jewish, for instance. And so we're always going to be in that position. But as we get knowledgeable, there's less and less surprise in my life concerning that, except the idea that forevermore, I'm going to be surprised. I'll never get over how thoroughly dominant the Jews have taken over our society. But remember, they take over the media in a society. That's how they do it. They come in small numbers. They take over the media. Because once they control the media, they control the nation. They've done it in every country they've ever gone into. They do that. And if you can control the media, do what you want. They've got America now going over and killing people by the hundreds and hundreds of thousands merely because we don't like their leader. I mean, and there's nothing really the majority of people are going to be able to do about it. They're not going to research who's feeding them this news. But it's not our people. We don't have control of the media anymore. Let's get back now to the top 10 rock ballads of all time. I'm going to go through these here. I'm going to give you 15 of them to argue about. And then you can come on the website and go to the comment section and say, okay, after listening to the arguments, here's my top 10 from those 15. I'm going to ask you to pick the top 10 of the 15 I have. I'm going to list here. Because, I mean, otherwise the list will get too big and there's not much we can do. I'm curious what you would think the top 10 of these top 15 I've picked are. Yeah, you can put in a few more other people if you want. I mean, that's just the way. But I'm curious. And by the way, these songs will not be in any order whatsoever, any preference. You really can't. I mean, once a song gets so good, it's just a great song. It's not like, well, this one's better than this one. I mean, you get to a certain level, and that's that. It's as good as it gets. And I mean, can I say the Nutcracker Suite is better than something that Johann Strauss Jr. has done? No, I really can't. Can I say the Blue Danube is better than something by like Pachelbel's Canon in D major. No, I can't, and I can't say that song is better than Beethoven's Ninth or whatever. You just can't do that. So you get to a certain point. We got these top 10 we're going to try to get to. I'm going to give you 15. I'm going to start off with I Am the Walrus by the Beatles. It came out about 1967. Very, very interesting song. It's certainly a John Lennon type of composition that there ever was one. It might be something he's remembered hundreds and hundreds of years from now. And it's credited to Lennon and McCartney, but remember, that was just a contractual thing, an agreement that Lennon and McCartney had. They just didn't worry about who wrote what, because a lot of times the other individual in the party would add to the song, and then they would just say, oh, it's just by both of us, don't worry about it. But generally speaking, this was a John Lennon song, and people that are astute about Lennon and McCartney and their style of writing, you quickly know, for the most part, if it's a John Lennon song or a Paul McCartney song. McCartney songs were a little lighter, a little more popish. Lennon songs were more outrageously lyrical and somewhat of an undercurrent threat going on there. That's the bad. Lennon was the bad guy, McCartney was the good guy, kind of routine, and it's kind of hilarious when you think about it. Anyway, Lennon claims he wrote the first two lines on separate acid trips. Lennon composed the song by combining three songs he had been working on. I do the same thing. Some of my compilations come from several songs, and I put them into a single song. It makes the song very interesting, by the way, and it takes the song in different directions. Then he learned, this is typical Lennon if there ever was, when he learned that a teacher at his old primary school, probably grade school, middle school, whatever, was having his students analyze the Beatles' lyrics, Lennon couldn't resist. With that in mind, he added some verses of nonsense words. Lennon gave instructions then to George Martin, their producer, and he gave George Martin a lot of leeway. At times he'd be cross with Martin at times, but other times I think overall Lennon was absolutely... George Martin was like a father figure to him, and George Martin was the technical person in the studio that could deal with the engineer and then deal with the Beatles and their idiosyncrasies probably as well as anybody could have. And so while they're recording this song, after they lay down a lot of the main tracks, it's kind of interesting here, Lennon told Martin how he wanted the orchestration to be scored, and he included a singing to some of the instruments. He would, I want the strings to go la da 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 da, and I've done that in the recording studio when I work with just some master musicians. There's some that I will always be indebted to the rest of my life, that I'm comfortable working with them, that we almost see in each other's heads and minds and our thought process, and I like working with these individual people. At times I felt I've had the best band in the world working with me, back in the 90s anyway, when I was often in the studio. Now I record out of my home quite a bit, and I do all the orchestration myself. But when I'm working with some of the best musicians in South Florida, I truly believe I'm working with some of the world's best musicians. And so he had George Martin to work with in this case. So they had a large group of professional studio vocalists called the Mike Sams Singers. And they took part in the overdubbing of this song, I Am the Walrus Also. And if you can remember, they would have them singing things like, ho, 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 hee, 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 ho, ha, hoo, ha, oompa, oompa, stick it in the jumper. Everybody's got one. I mean, all that stuff was done by a group of professional singers. It wasn't the Beatles. I didn't realize that. I thought maybe the Beatles would do it. But they got these other voices in there just to really make it interesting. And the shrill whooping noises was done by, of course, female voices and stuff. They could do that easier. So anyway, there it is. My first choice is I Am the Walrus. I'm not saying that's number one. I'm just saying I got them in order here, and I'm going to just go down the line. The next one.
There's a lady who's sure a little bit. If there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alone there.
Stairway to Heaven by Jimmy Page and Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin. Stairway to Heaven is considered the number one played FM rock song of all time. And you can see that through the years. I mean, you can go into a music shop where they sell guitars and stuff, and a lot of times they'll have signs up saying, do not play Stairway to Heaven. Because it was so often that musicians would come in thinking that they were fantastic because they could copy Jimmy Page on part of that Stairway to Heaven, if you remember the song. Here, I'm going to play a little bit up for you. And it was, they would say, don't play Stairway to Heaven because everybody got sick of hearing it, you know. And that was so funny. Anyway, the song was 8 minutes and 2 seconds. And it was composed in several sections with an increase in tempo and volume, as this guy was talking about. I was reading some of his comments as the song progresses. But you can recognize the different songs. It starts, there's a lady who's sure that a glitter is gold. I didn't get the words right there. I'm sorry. But then it goes into the super lead guitar riff, some of the greatest lead guitar of all time is in that song. And it was acoustic and initially, and then it had a whole bunch of electric instrumentation as it was finally put together. And then the final section is a high tempo hard rock section highlighted by, quote, an intricate guitar solo by Jimmy Page, and it says one of the great ones. So there's another one. Okay, I'm going to go number three here. Another one by John Lennon. This one is Imagine.
Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer.
The ultimate Antichrist song. I'm a Christian, and I do love the song. And I wrote a song in the 90s, and I was going to call it Imagine There Is, because he's imagined there is no heaven. And why would you want to do that? Even if you're an atheist, why would you want to imagine there's no heaven? If you're an atheist and don't believe in a God, or you don't believe Jesus Christ is your Savior like I do, and you can believe anything you want. Other people have their faith, and I have friends that believe in everything or not in anything. I mean, we're all different people. But even when I was a so-called atheist, I don't know, I was just running away from the Lord because I was so bitter at times. And I would never have wanted to not believe there's a heaven. I so deeply, for everyone here, whether you're a Christian, a Buddhist, a Jewish person, I don't care who you are, an atheist, mud-slinging antichrist, I don't care who you are, but I hope that everybody eventually gets to heaven. The Bible tells us there's certain rules about that. And so I adhere to those rules, and I hope somehow there's there's ways that everybody can, in a sense, work their way to heaven. Because I would hate to see anybody go to a terrible place or just die and their soul just leaves their body. They stop breathing. That's the end. There's too much going on in this universe that we just don't know, and it's hard for me to think that's it. Just like I don't know where we came from, I'm not really sure. And it's beyond my imagination on this, not to quote the song here. But anyway, I hope you all understand that. I hope there is a heaven. I hope to see everybody there. Lennon said, it is the concept of positive prayer. Of all songs, he says that. But I consider it the ultimate Antichrist song. As much as I love the song, he considers it one of his best. If you can imagine a world at war with no intentions of compromise, not without weapons, but without this, my nuke is bigger than your nuke thing, then it can be true. Lennon said, the world church called me once and asked, can we use the lyrics to Imagine and just change it to Imagine One Religion? That showed me that they didn't understand it at all. Well, Lennon would never admit this, but maybe he didn't know. He was looking. He said it would defeat the whole purpose of the song, the whole idea, and I just disagree with that. Lennon said he considered Imagine to be as strong a composition as any he had written with the Beatles. He described the song's meaning and explicated its commercial appeal, anti-religious, anti-nationalistic, I'm nationalistic, anti-conventional, there's some convention I want to use, anti-capitalistic, I'm free enterprise though, but because it is sugar-coated, it is accepted. Then he said this, now I understand what you have to do. Put your political message across with a little honey. Wow, learning from his Jewish masters here. We don't hate anybody. We love everything, and they're giving us communism, which is death to a society. Just sugarcoat it with a little honey. My mother used to always tell me, Robert, Bobby, you can catch more bees with honey. She always told me that. And I still remember that, and I can be very persuasive at times understanding that. The next song is, I didn't even bother to put this one into the computer today. And I'll tell you what. Wise men say only fools rush in. 'Cause I can't help falling in love with you. Yeah, I Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley. At least he was the performer on this that most people remember. Actually, it was an old French melody. And as Jews will do, they stole the melody. A guy named George Weiss. And he rewrote lyrics to it, and of course, then he's gone down as the writer of "I Can't Help Falling in Love." I'm sorry, there's a Frenchman out there somewhere that wrote a beautiful melody, and of course, that's one of the greatest ballads of all time. It's not something I would listen to. I don't listen to much Elvis Presley per se. I don't know why. He's kind of a woman's thing, He's not a songwriter per se, not a musician. He's maybe the greatest entertainer of all time, but it's not something I don't fall too closely. There's a lot of things about Elvis I like as a person. There's a lot of things I admire him about. Number five, and the people that understand this that are from the South are going to understand. They're going to understand this 100%. Freebird, Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Mm-hmm.
written by Ronnie Van Zant and Alan Collins. And of course, remember the tragedy of the many that died in that plane crash in, was it southern Mississippi, northern Louisiana, back in the 70s when they were killed in the plane crash. Many of the Lynyrd Skynyrd musicians, including Ronnie Van Zant. And it's called maybe the most requested song in the history of rock music. And this is one thing I want to say about this song, that many of you know I came out of the Southern movement. I'm still in the Southern movement per se. I'm a huge supporter of the League of the South, and they're Southern heritage through and through, with a lot of Yankees that are members of the Southern League of the South, because even during the war between the states, many people from the North came and fought for the South because they believed in what the South was all about. It was the foundation of our country of 1775 in a terrible, terrible war from 61 to 1865. And many, many people from the North came and joined up in the South. And those that didn't come South but still supported the South were called Copperheads. They carried a Copperhead coin that identified them, so people wouldn't know they could have this coin with a Copperhead and know that they were among friends. So anyway, getting back to Freebird, why I'm saying this is so special. It is outside of the song Dixie, and actually the anthem of the Southern states was the single Star. I'm pulling a blank on it now. I mean, I even have a recording of it I'm very proud of. We are a band of brothers. That's actually was the national anthem of the Southern states. But anyway, in the modern world, if Southerners hear Freebird come on, and I'm going to play a little bit for you, I mean, tears will start coming out of many Southern people when they hear this. It represents who they are, and whether we've been taken over by this godless, evil federal government that's in occupying status in the South. This isn't their country, and these Yankees that come down here and don't understand it, they're here on borrowed time, because when Dixie rises again, you better take a pledge to Dixie or get your butt out of here, and we're going to deport a lot of these people that are the Antichrist of the South. We don't want them down here. This is our place. But anyway, Freebird is absolutely beautiful. It only peaked in the charts, the Billboard Hot 100, only at number 19. But as I said, these ballads sometimes don't hit people right away and they don't get the number one. But it becomes the most requested song in the history of rock and roll. So that's something to be cognizant of. And anybody would have been proud to write this song. And I'll tell you what, it's powerful. And I hope you enjoy. I'm going to play some of it for you, of course, in this show. Number six I've got, here's one. A lot of you going to love this. Procol Harum, remember that? Back in the 60s, actually. And it only, without much promotion, though. They say the record label kind of sat on their butts not thinking it was going to be a hit. It reached number 5 on the U.S. charts. Of course, number 1 in England, where these guys were from. They call it... It was one of fewer than 30 all-time singles, not the album sales, but the singles, that have sold over 10 million and more copies. How many this one has sold, I don't know. I've downloaded that into my computer. And I even have a mastering process on my computer, because you guys know what I do. You ladies know I'm an artist myself, songwriter, and I do a lot of recording myself. So I have this system on my computer. And I think A Whiter Shade of Pale should have had a little brighter mix and a little more bass into it. So I put more bass into it. You know, you can do that with the faders on your program, and you can increase your bass for a better mix. So I have a little more powerful mix to it, but I love the song. This is also one that's considered to have Bach flavoring, with the instrument of the organ that goes in there. The lead singer actually was a keyboardist, but he played piano normally, and then they also had a guy on the B3 Hammond organ that played this beautiful part of the song. A guy named Matthew Fisher was on the B3 when they recorded this, and he won after many, many years. He decided to sue. He wanted credit for the song, too. And the original two writers on the song disputed it. Says, no, he was a musician that played with this, and he played that organ part, but he didn't write the song. Well, he went to court, and then on July 30th, 2009, Fisher won in court unanimously from the law lords in England, and they were unanimous in ruling for him. However, if I would have been on the court, no. That's opening up a can of worms, and it will defeat the songwriting processes. Every time somebody adds something to the song, all of a sudden they get songwriting credit. You will destroy songwriting by doing that. So what the song was performed and recorded at Olympic Studios in London, England, with Gary Brooker providing the vocals and piano, Matthew Fisher on the Hammond. Oh, this one was not a B3, but an M102. Maybe that's a version of the of the B3, because it's just classic. David Knight on bass, David Knights, plural, on bass, Ray Royer on guitar. The Hammond organ line of A Whiter Shade of Pale was inspired by Johann Sebastian Bach. In 2005, former Procol Harum organist Matthew Fisher filed suit in the High Court against Gary Brooker and his publisher, claiming that he co-wrote the music for the song, not the lyrics, but the music. Fisher won the case, but was awarded 40% of the half composer's share of the music copyright. At least I'm saying it was half, rather than 50% he was seeking, and not granted royalties prior to 2005. Because they said he waited so long, why did he wait all this time? To reverse the royalties over the past 30, 40 years, what would have just bankrupted people over. I mean, you can't do it. It just would not have worked. But that is one of the most beautiful, beautiful songs of all time. Yesterday,
all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as
comes in at number 7 on my list here. Again, not in any specific order, by the Beatles. Pretty much a Paul McCartney song. Has over 2,200 covered versions and probably millions more that aren't even counted. They call this the most covered song in the history of music, or certainly one of the most history of recorded music. Though credited with Lennon and McCartney, the song was written solely by McCartney. And McCartney even asked Yoko Ono after Lennon's death if she would agree to change the credit on the songs for history's sake. And Yoko, being Yoko, said no. So that's it. McCartney said he composed the entire melody in a dream one night in his room at the Wimpole Street home of his then girlfriend Jane Asher. Well, he shouldn't have been sleeping with her at night and her family. Upon waking, he hurried to a piano and played the tune to avoid forgetting it. And after that, he was always worried he had stole the melody. He'd play it to friends for weeks after he wrote it, and ever says, no, we've never heard that melody before. It must be yours, Paul. And finally, after about a month, he says, okay, it's my song. Now here's a neat one. I love this song. I have now number 8, Don't Worry Baby by the Beach Boys, written by Brian Wilson and Roger Christian, and produced by Wilson and first recorded by the Beach Boys, of course. It was released as the B-side of the Beach Boys' first number one hit single, I Get Around. Remember back in the year, in the days of the 45 RPM record, the singles, you had actually double-sided hits, and this was a surprise. And actually, this became more important than I Get Around. I love I Get Around, too. But Don't Worry Baby is one that is really special. Brian Wilson cited this song as his attempt to capture the essence of his all-time favorite record, Be My Baby by the Ronettes, who later covered the song too. At one time, Wilson listened to his 45 of the song he could never do up to 100 times a day. Now, before you think that's kind of crazy, I'm a person like that, but if I really like a song, I don't like very much, but if I really like a song, I've got to play it over and over and over again. I might play it 10 times in a row to get it out of my system. I have to get rid of it so I can go on in my business in my life. And a lot of musicians can be like that. It's just the way I am. Here's another one. This one's not in the secular field, but it's so unbelievably beautiful. I'm going to put it here with the most beautiful power ballads of all time, rock ballads. I Can Only Imagine by Mercy Me. I'm going to play you some of this song, and it's a song that I even added effects to, and I'm not really happy with the way they recorded the whole song, but the first part of the song is the most beautiful rendition of lyrics and melody that you can ever have. It's composed, written and composed by, why would you say written and composed? I guess the lyrics written and the music composed by Bart Millard. And it was based around a main piano track and was inspired by the death of his father. He considers what it would be like to be in heaven and to be standing before God. And listen to these words.
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine. I can only imagine. Surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel? Will I dance for you, Jesus, or in awe of you be still? Will I stand in your presence, to my knees or will I fall? Will I sing hallelujah? Will I be able to speak at all? I can only imagine. Can only imagine. I can only imagine when all I would do is forever. Forever worship you. I can only imagine.
Folks, I remember when I heard this song and I was all alone on a Friday night and I played it. And I was so overwhelmed, I just cried. And I played it over and over again, and I couldn't stop crying. It was so powerful. And I don't cry from pain. I'm kind of a man's man. I don't like the sissified, over dramatic things. But I will cry tears of passion, and I will cry tears of great beauty, and people that overcome great, great obstacles in life. And this man was so saddened by his father's death, and he knew his father was a Christian, and God, how's my dad doing? And how is he in heaven? And what was his relationship? So when he goes into heaven, he's wondering, like with his dad, how will you behave? And so listen to it. It's really something. It's just one of the great songs ever written. The guy's also a great singer. Listen to him singing. He's singing it too. So he wrote the lyrics. He wrote the music. He sang it. I mean, it's beautiful. It's one of the best ever in the history of the world. Number 10, Every Breath You Take by Sting. When he was with the Police, it's kind of their signature song. It's the one that made them phenomenally popular.
Every breath you take.
It's said to generate between a quarter and one-third of his music publishing income, and he's got like 10 mansions around the world he lives in. Not one of my favorite people on his way of life, but nevertheless, very beautiful, beautiful song. I just loved it. Number 11, I've got down here, Time for Me to Fly by REO Speedwagon, written by Kevin Cronin. And he's the lead vocalist, rhythm guitarist, and occasional pianist for the American rock band REO Speedwagon.
I've been around for you, been up and down for you, but I just can't get any relief. I've swallowed my pride for you, lived a life for you.
Kevin bought with lead guitarist Gary Richrath for control, of the band, as Rich Raff didn't like ballads. He was a lead rock and guitarist, and he wanted everything to be a hard rock type anthem. And here comes Kevin Cronin into the band, who can really write and sing. And he had this is a classic power ballad, folks. Listen to the song. It's gorgeous. I hope you enjoy it. Here's a next one on my list. Number 12 is Love Hurts. The recorded version by Nazareth. It was recorded by the Everly Brothers and a lot of other people. But Nazareth did the song justice. Just beautiful. I'm going to play you some of this here. Composed by Boudelow, if he pronounces it Boudelow, Boudelow Bryant. Him and his wife were songwriters, and this is one that he wrote. And a beautiful, beautiful song. The big version of it, 1995, a version of the rock band Nazareth when they did it. And I remember being on the road as a rock and roller at the time, and in the afternoons not having anything to do. Because you're out on the road in the middle of nowhere in motels and everything, waiting for the night to come when your band plays. And we were in a bar somewhere. I didn't drink. We're in the bar, but I'd go play the jukebox, and Nazareth's version of Love Hurts would be on it, and I'd put the money in and play that song. And, man, that was really something to listen to. I loved it. Number 13, Turn the Page by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
East of Omaha. You can listen.
Bob Seger's a giant in the rock world. He's a songwriter, great singer. By the early 70s, he had dropped the Bob Seger system from his name. That's what he, Ramblin' Gamblin'. I'm a Ramblin' Gamblin' Man. And he did that song, and that was with the Bob Seger system. Eventually, he got rid of that stuff. Turn the Page was about the emotional ups and downs of being on the road. He even mentions a city I grew up close to, east of Omaha, you know, and that really touched my heart on that. As you can imagine, anybody from the Midwest during the cold and you're traveling from city to city, which I was in that position for trying to make a living. That's a tough way to make a living. You have to have your heart go out to those people. Gorgeous song. I hope you like it, or maybe you already know it. Number 14 on my list. This is going to be one the ladies love. This one, "The Lady in Red" by Christa Berg, and I think Christa Berg is a very strong Christian, by the way. This is a secular song he written in reference to his wife Diane. On the British TV series This Is Your Life, DeBerg said that the song was inspired by the memory of when he first saw his wife Diane, and how men so often cannot even remember what their wives were wearing when they first met. She was wearing a red dress. Christa Berg, born Christopher John Davison in 1948, is an Argentinian-born British-Irish singer-songwriter. His dad was English, I believe, and his mother was Irish. But his dad was a diplomat, and so they traveled quite a bit. He's been married to his wife Diane since 1977. It hasn't been all roses. He had an affair one time, and that was a big thing. His family had to forgive him, but they kept the marriage together, and they have two sons, Hubie and Michael. And wait till you hear this. His daughter, Rosanna, is a model, and she won the Miss World competition of 2003 for Ireland. Yes, I love that one. Number 15, True Love Ways.
Just you know why you and I.
Written by Buddy Holly, although Norman Petty puts his name in there as a credit. Don't think for a minute he had anything to do with it. The guy was a cheat. And Norman Petty added his name to the writing credits of Holly's songs, including titles. Holly had written in Nashville before he even started working with Norman in his studio. He also gave himself co-writing credit on some of the apartment tapes that Buddy wrote and produced while living in New York City after his official break with the Crickets and him, Norman. And so Buddy Holly wrote True Love Ways for his wife, who was a Hispanic girl, Maria Elena Holly, who was worked at one of the record labels. And he did that as a wedding gift. True Love Ways. Well, that's my list, folks. I'm curious at what you all think of this. I just love doing this show on the top 10 rock ballads of all time. As I've said before, I'm going to do over the next several months, a year, I'm going to come up with the best classical songs of all time. I'm going to come up with the top 10 pop songs. I'm going to come up with maybe fast songs. Maybe I'll do that one. Top 10 classic country of all time. Boy, will that be something to have. So I'm going to have shows like this once in a while where we have top 10s and then we get to arguing in good-naturedly arguing over what are the best songs and stuff. So I hope you enjoyed this show. Everybody out there, I love you so much, and thanks for listening in. And be sure to leave comments at the end of the show here on the website of what you thought of the show and your comments on what you think are the best songs. Again, this is Robert Lloyd of Rockin'. I love the name of Rockin' the Music World. And I hope you love the show. See you. God bless you all. Bye-bye.
Every morning, Nick in the morning with you.